Last week, the death of Terry O'Neill, photographer of swinging 60s London, gained headlines and nostalgic stories all around the world. Terry was one of a handful of superstar photographers of the time: David Bailey, Terence Donovan, Bob Gruen, Robert Freeman and Michael Cooper. But only Cooper has a connection with Masterton. Simon Morris with a story.
If Michael Cooper did nothing else, he'd have found a place in popular culture history as the man who photographed Sgt. Pepper for the Gatefold album cover. But Keith Richards' old flatmate did a lot more before dying tragically young by his own hand in 1973. He'd been planning a book featuring his huge collection of images, and when it finally came out, it was thanks to a publisher as far away from swinging London as it's possible to get. From Masterton, New Zealand, David Headley. Hi, David. How are you?
Nice to be here, Simon. Yes.
This is not your first connection with the Beatles, though, is it?
No, I was very fortunate as a young man in my late 20s working in publishing and bookselling to meet George Harrison and work with him on a book called 50 Years Adrift by Derek Taylor.
Mm-hmm. And you actually persuaded George Harrison to come out to Sydney, didn't you, to publicise the book?
Yes, well, Derek was the Beatles' press officer and publicist, and he had this incredible story to tell, and he got involved with the Birds and the Mamas and the Papas, but he wasn't known like the Beatles. But George and him were great friends, and George had been an editor on the book, on his autobiography, 50 Years Adrift, and had contributed a lot of text to the book. And when it came time to sell and market the books, everybody was a little concerned that, you know, who is Derek Taylor? But everybody knew who George Harrison was. One evening at Friar Park, when we'd been working on the book and we were just chilling out, and I said to George...
Sorry, I just need to get that settled a little bit. Right, so, sorry.
And so Derek was a little nervous about the whole project, and George had said to me, do you think this book's going to sell? And I said, well, it'll sell if you help. Just a little bit of help from a friend, as it were. And George, reluctantly at first, but then said, oh, why not? You know, what do you have in mind? And I actually had nothing in mind at the time. It was just a throwaway line, but realised that there was an opportunity to do something in New Zealand and Australia. So I suggested perhaps we could have an event at the Sydney Opera House.
A Beatle at the Opera House, I believe it was called.
Yes, well, in a way, it was kind of an off-the-wall idea because it, at those times, opera and
Beatles.
Pop, yeah, they just didn't fit.
Right.
Today, of course, that's a very quite a common thing, isn't it?
For
the two to mix. But it was a bit of an off-the-wall idea, but it appealed to George's sort of Pythonist sort of sense of humour, which, of course, he had.
Then after that, you worked with Ringo, and you worked with him a couple of times, in fact, didn't you?
I've helped with a couple of Ringo's projects. Yes, he's both his book called Postcards from the Boys and then a wonderful book called Photograph, which I helped put together a little bit, but mostly helped launch in L.A. with Ringo and Barbara, his wife. And so that was, yeah, very special. Ringo's a great guy and very supportive of the broader, you know, music and book and the Genesis family.
Tell me about Genesis. How did you get involved with Genesis Publishing?
Like most things in life, a element of luck and meeting somebody who you had I sort of had an affinity with, a man called Brian Roylance, who was a British publisher, sadly not with us now, but was one of the greats of the 20th century, actually, producing this extraordinary books. And we met when I was on a bookselling and publishing foray, visiting Frankfurt Book Fair and then the American Book Fair, and came upon Brian Roylance with his stand Genesis. And at that point, he was producing these magnificent facsimiles of Voyages of Discovery, like William Bligh's Log of the Bounty. And,
oh, wow, I had no idea. I just associated Genesis with pop star biographies or pop star specials.
Brian Roylance was a master printer. He worked in printing and also knew a great deal about bookbinding. And he noticed in the British Library the original logs of Captain Cook's endeavour and resolution. This is the handwritten log while Cook was sailing. And there was only one of it, of course, and it was presented back to the Admiralty, now sits in the British Library. And Brian, with his skills and knowledge, realised he could produce facsimiles exactly as it was, hand-bound in the same way in leather, all very beautiful. And so he put his hand to that. And I was saw the original Log of the Bounty and then Captain Cook's Endeavour and was kind of drawn to them because of my love of beautiful books. And we had got this rapport going, and I helped with the second voyage, the Resolution, and contacted the Alexander Turnbull Library here in Wellington and sought information and materials which were able to be used as part of the project. So I kind of eventually became kind of co-published that in effect by buying half the edition and selling it in Australia and in New Zealand. And that led to this sort of relationship and friendship. I didn't realise at the time that Brian had this other life where he was very friendly with firstly Derek Taylor and then became very friendly with George Harrison. And over a period of time, I started to meet them and became part of the circle, as it were.
Among the other books that you guys have published, there's books by Chrissie Hynde and Ronnie Wood. Ronnie Wood's amazing. I've seen a shop entirely devoted to his paintings.
Very skillful artists. So often... These musicians, they're all creatives, aren't they? And people like Ronnie Wood could have easily become just an artist, not just a guitar player. I mean, Bob Dylan's is a good artist.
Absolutely.
Chrissie Hynde's a good artist. An array of interesting musicians that John Lennon, you know, could draw very well. A lot of them went to art school and then got into music.
But the main thing about them is that these are not your usual airport paperback books. These are absolute works of art. You've got one in front of you, actually. This is the Blinds and Shutters thing. Just to touch, it's the most extraordinary book I've ever seen. It's just unbelievable.
I love beautiful books. Not only this book is magnificent, it's hand-bound and leather and printed on archival paper and beautifully produced by artisans in Milan and Italy. You know, the bookbinder's been going for 80 years. It's a family business. The papermaker's the same.
That's right. You know, the paper itself is extraordinary.
Yeah.
But I feel I should say also that at the beginning of each of these books is an individual list of autographs. These are genuine autographs, and they're all different in each book.
Yeah. Well, the project was created, the idea for the project was created by Michael Cooper. He was most famous for Sergeant Pepper, but he also did his Sedanic Majesty's Request album cover. He was actually started as a Vogue fashion photographer, but he participated in the 60s, unfortunately for him, slightly too much. But at the end of the day, he captured the essence of the 60s, not just from a music point of view, but from a fashion, because there was so much, and from the film, literature, you know, he was close to the beat writers, you know, Allen Ginsberg, William Burroughs, Jean Genet, the French writer. He was also connected to Andy Warhol and David Hockney, and then many of the fashion people like Twiggy and designers.
And this was all happening at a very specific time and in a very specific place, wasn't
it? That's right, yeah. Mostly in London. I mean, it was very much Chelsea, Robert Fraser, the art dealer who Paul McCartney became very close to, was kind of a catalyst for a lot of it, and Michael and him. And then it went across to New York with Warhol and to the factory and all that scene, and then to LA with people like Dennis Hopper and Dean Stockwell and Larry Rivers, all those sort of West Coast artists.
You mentioned Andy Warhol. The name that surprised me when I was looking through it was Marc Chagall. And for some reason, I thought Marc Chagall was a good 50 years before that. But
well, no. Bill Wyman photographed Chagall when he was an older man. He wasn't participating in the 60s in that way, but he was an influence, like Magritte and Dubuffet, the French artist. They were hugely influential, the surrealists influenced the pop artists, who in turn influenced the musicians, you know, Sgt. Pepper and all of that kind of... It was a very much a cross-fertilisation of artistic talent. You know, people think of the 60s music scene as sort of popping out of a repressed, you know, 450s and the war, post-war scene, but actually the 60s were more than just music. They were an explosion of a whole cross-fertilisation of the arts.
If I was to use a word to describe 1966 and 67, which is sort of what this book is mostly about, I'd use the word curious. Curiouser and curiouser. It was Alice in Wonderland at that particular time. Nobody knew anything, but they were really willing to try everything, weren't they?
Yes, they were experimenting and probably didn't fully realise the implications of what they're doing, but there was just so much energy. And it was also the aristocracy mixing with everyday English people. Jean-Paul Getty was floating around. There was a lot of connections between the Eton crew and the
Well, there was a guy called Tara Brown who famously died and inspired the song A Day in the Life.
That's right.
He's in the book.
Yeah,
you know.
he was in the book. And so it is an interesting look at where Britain was in the 60s, but you know, how it affected the rest of the world.
We'll talk about Michael Cooper now, I think, but you said that he was a participant. I remember all the reviews of Terry O'Neill, who passed away quite recently, was that he never wanted to be a participant. He wanted to be an observer. But I suspect that Michael Cooper was not like that.
No, he wasn't. He didn't. As you mentioned, he lived with Keith Richards, which was, and he was very close to the Beatles as well. So he was going to the parties, going to the studios, but he wasn't really looking to make a career out of it. He was kind of just rolling with it. And that kind of unfortunately became his downfall. But it also enabled him to collect and put all these amazing photos together. I mean, 70,000 photographs he took, negatives, and only ever developed a handful, like less than 40.
I know that the biggest problem with putting the book together was the fact that he wasn't a very assiduous note taker, was he?
No, that wasn't part of what he was doing. He was just rolling around from event to event and happening to happening. But, I mean, Bill Wyman, when the photos were inherited by Michael's son, Adam, who still is the custodian of them, which is just wonderful that he has been the beneficiary. He lives in Argentina, he's in the film industry, but he's had the benefit of this beautiful collection, which we're able to now sort of exhibit and show in the book. And we're also exhibiting it in Auckland, in Britomart, at this little Karen Walker Headley's pop-up, which is fun. So we've got photos on the wall and the book presented, plus it in our Masterton store. He's been the beneficiary and it's been wonderful. But if Michael hadn't kept those, in fact, it was a girlfriend of Michael's that kept them after he died and gave them to Adam when Adam was 21, then we wouldn't be able to see all these incredible photos where people like Terry O'Neill, Bob Gruen, Robert Freeman, they were professional photographers. And as you say, this is a little bit different. It's more of an inside view.
I believe there are still people in there where everybody connected with it is looking at it saying, who is that guy?
Yes, there are some photos we just couldn't leave out, even though nobody knows who they were. We knew that Keith and it was in a lot, so we knew the Stones were there. And Bill Wyman, as I started to say, put up, you know, the funding to clean 70,000 negatives and produce contact sheets, which was an enormous task.
That must have been amazing because apart from anything else, putting his name to it must have done the same thing that putting George Harrison's name to the Derek Taylor book must have done.
Absolutely. I mean, Bill was known as the archivist of the Stones. I mean, he was interested in history and the archival nature of what we were doing. So he was hugely supportive. What we didn't realise is how close Michael was to so many different people. So when we started to, in 1990s, contact all these interesting people, they all just poured their love and support for the project, and it became like a 60s collaboration.
You know? I believe that Francis Bacon was the one that you were most keen to get onto.
Well, Francis Bacon was, you know, for those that don't know him, he, you know, probably is the greatest British artist of the 20th century. Even though he wasn't even trained as an artist particularly, he became kind of a major force. And his observations about the 60s, because he was slightly older than, you know, than the Beatles and the Stones, were really interesting. He contributed, but many people contributed. 93 people have written texts for the book, and they were all, apart from all the Beatles, all the Rolling Stones, except for John Lennon, who passed away by that stage. You know, it was a real 60s collaboration, and that's why they all wanted to autograph the books, because they wanted to take an ownership in them.
You know, did you meet Paul McCartney? Because I knew you had a relationship with George and Ringo.
No, I didn't, actually. I have never met Paul. Paul's never been part of, he was part of this book, but my partner Brian actually did the interviews with him. I wasn't, so I missed that sort of opportunity. Although I know Paul's very supportive of not only this project, but all of the Genesis books.
Masterton publisher and bookseller David Headley talking to Simon Morris.